running argument. You join the chorus, your reason's wrong. It's a wonder we had time to learn a song. History, I think of history. What I think is I should think about it more. What's with working, touring, teching, the relationship is wrecking. It's a miracle I make it through the door on Monday night. There's no consensus what we should be.
History, I think of history. What perpetuates a chorus of gay men? If the price of liberation means we face assimilation, will we all end up invisible again? If we're still here in 20 years, come ask us then.
I join the chorus.
And except for the discontent part, that pretty much sums it up. That was the New York City Gay Men's Chorus, and from their CD from 2000 called New Century Songbook, that was I Joined the Chorus. This is J.D. Doyle, and on this edition of Queer Music Heritage, my goal is to cover the gay and lesbian choral movement, which I believe is an important part of our culture. So that encompasses its history, social, educational, and political aspects, and the support it gives its members in creating a safe place, a place to just be themselves. This project has been a daunting one to me because I really wanted to do it justice, so my internet site will include several additional hours, over 9 in all, which will cover some of the special music commissioned by various choruses over the last 30-plus years. And there will be segments on the music of international choruses, a special segment on the story of the Houston Gay Men's Chorus, and, as this is November, Christmas music. But this first hour will try to give you the history of the movement and will include a special interview with Dr. Tim Selig, well known for his 20 years as director of Dallas's Turtle Creek Chorale. But back to the beginning. I want to give credit to two choruses that formed prior to when the gay and lesbian choral movement really got started. In 1975, Catherine Roma formed the Anacrusis Women's Choir in Philadelphia, the oldest chorus affiliated with this movement. While they identify as a feminist chorus, they did join the organization GALA, Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses, in 1988. In 1977, in New York City, the Gotham Male Chorus was formed, specializing in Gregorian chant and Renaissance music. They changed their name in 1979 to Stonewall Chorale. This was done when women joined the group, making it the nation's first gay and lesbian chorus. I've got some music from both of these groups, starting with Anacrusis, from their first recording in 1987. Under this introduction was their song, Bread and Roses, and now here's their take on the doo-wop classic, Forever Loving You.
Is it yes or is it no? Should I stay and be happy or should I go? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. Does your heart beat like mine? Does it beat so fast as if it had too much wine? If this is so, I'll be forever loving you. When you're near, everything is so clear when you smile. Let my heart overflow when you're near.
From the cassette tape by the Anacrusis Women's Choir called But We Fight for Roses Too, that was Forever Loving You. Did you notice the line, When You're Near Me, I Feel So Gay? And the Stonewall Chorale has released no recordings, so I want to thank its current director, Cynthia Powell, for getting me a song from 2007 from their archives. Beat Beat Drums is a Robert Vaughan Williams anti-war piece based on a Walt Whitman poem. For the real breakthrough in gay chorus history, we have to give credit for inspiration to the gay bands that had formed in early 1978. In San Francisco, John Sims founded the San Francisco Gay Freedom Band as a response to the Anita Bryant campaigns, and bands in Los Angeles, New York City, and Houston had formed by the next spring. Also in 1978, Sims formed the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. Here was history, as it was the first openly gay-identified choral organization. In short, it used the word gay in its name. It held its first rehearsal on October 30, 1978, and they had a rehearsal scheduled for the evening of November 27th. Instead, that day yielded their first public performance, an impromptu one, as they participated in a memorial service at City Hall for George Moscone and Harvey Milk. They sang this song, Thou Lord Our Refuge, which they later recorded at their 25th anniversary concert in 2003, and I'm going from it to the song Stout-Hearted Men. This was recorded at the one-year anniversary of the deaths in November of 1979, and I thank the San Francisco Lesbian and Gay Historical Society for providing this track, the oldest recording I know of by a gay chorus.
Thank you. just the way. Give me some men who are stout, ardent men who will fight for the right. For the right that they assert, me with 10 who are stout, ardent 10, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Oh, shoulder to shoulder, and bolder and bolder they grow as they go.
So right away, while perhaps not thought of when the choruses were formed, they stepped up to meet a need for healing. This happened again in November of 1980 when the New York City Gay Men's Chorus sang at a memorial for victims of a shooting at the gay bar The Ramrod in Greenwich Village. And of course, this would be magnified many times over in succeeding years in responding to the toll taken by AIDS. Shortly after the San Francisco Chorus was formed, other cities followed, such as Los Angeles, New York City, Dallas, Houston, Seattle, Chicago, Minneapolis, and others. And a bold move by the San Francisco Chorus led to even more. In June of 1981, they went on tour, visiting 9 cities around the country, and they coupled this with the release of the first recording, called San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus Tours America 81. It was easy for me to pick what song to play from this album. It's the song We Kiss in a Shadow, and it is from the 1951 Broadway musical The King and I. I've read that the sentiment of this song, having to hide a love, was taken to heart by gays and lesbians of that time, making it an underground anthem. And over the years, it's been sung by many gay choruses. On their tour, it was met with many tears from audience members.
Thank you.
The San Francisco Chorus in their tour planted the seeds of choruses in a number of other cities, and even in cities not on the tour. According to the website of the Vancouver Men's Chorus, several men came down to Seattle to watch the San Francisco Chorus perform and took that idea back to Vancouver and formed a chorus. And in 1981, there had already been discussions among a number of choruses about forming an organization, and representatives from 12 choruses met in Chicago to lay out the plans. At the first Gay Games in San Francisco in 1982, a choral festival was held in conjunction, with 14 choruses attending, and the organization was officially founded. At the closing ceremony of the games, the combined choruses sang together, and what an act of unity and vision and inspiration. I think that really began the gay and lesbian choral movement. The organization was called GALA, Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses, and the first festival was held in 1983, with 1,200 individuals from 12 choruses participating. I think it's amazing that a movement could get its start so quickly and grow so rapidly. Festivals are now held every 4 years, and the last two, Montreal in 2004 and Miami in 2008, were each attended by over 5,000 members. And the GALA website lists 172 different choruses as members of that organization. In studying the recordings of gay and lesbian choruses, I found it interesting that up through 1989, there were only 6 recordings released. And that includes one by the feminist chorus Anacrusis. It's fair to comment, though, that those were the years before the compact disc, and it was less feasible for a private organization to release its own recording. Still, I think it's neat that the second recording didn't even come from the United States. In mid-1981, a group in Sydney, Australia started performing. They called themselves the Gay Liberation Choir, and spelled choir Q-U-I-R-E. In 1983, they released a vinyl EP with 4 songs and called the release Hormones or Genes, the Gay Liberation Choir Goes Down on Vinyl. This next song by them has often made my Christmas shows. Here's God Help You Merry Dykes and Poofs.
God help you merry dykes and poofs, for much to your dismay, you have to see your family at least on Christmas Day. For relative discomfort or for total disarray, and they dare call this comfort and joy, comfort and joy, and they dare call this comfort and joy. God help you, merry dykes and poofs, it's true beyond a doubt, no else the strongest argument you have for coming out. Present it as a Christmas gift and hear the family shout that you dare call this comfort and joy, that you dare call this comfort and joy. Don we now our gay apparel, dykes and poofs take cheer, we'll sing a token Christmas carol, then we'll have New Year. A man who thinks he's God, there's one born every day, I fear, and they dare call this comfort and joy, and they dare call this comfort and joy.
Oh, hallelujah.
Oh, Sanima, oh, Sanima.
After Sydney's Gay Liberation Choir was Christmas in a more traditional vein, as done by the New York City Gay Men's Chorus on their first release in 1983. It was called Festival of Song. They followed that recording quickly with another the next year with an obvious title. From 1984, the recording was called New York, New York, a Broadway Extravaganza. And the last of those six recordings is, I think, a surprising one. Who would have expected a 45 RPM record by the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus singing the 49ers fight song?
Begins to play. We've got the line and wire. and our side has won the game.
From 1985, that was kind of a love song to some guy named Joe Montana. Sports, I guess. And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered art music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Before I get to my special interview, I want to mention one of the political struggles of choruses in the 80s, and that involves the American Choral Directors Association, a group devoted to promoting excellence in choral music and performance. They hold conventions, and to be invited to perform, choruses submit a blind audition tape, one that does not give the chorus's name. In 1984, the New York City Chorus got an invitation, but were not allowed to use gay in their name in the program. That issue came up again the next year when the Los Angeles Chorus got an invitation, and this time, with the help of the ACLU, they took the ACDA to court. When it was settled, any chorus could use its full name, and the ACDA changed its policies. I want to slip in a short song from 1990, and it's from a release not really billed as a chorus CD, but I'm counting it as one. It's a tribute to women's music artist Therese Adele, and the CD is simply called For Therese. For it, Muse, Cincinnati's women's choir, got together with the Atlanta Feminist Women's Choir and a number of solo artists to celebrate Therese's music. The song I picked is called Good Friends Are the Best. I'm pleased to bring you a special interview with Dr. Tim Selig. He was artistic director of the Turtle Creek Chorale from Dallas from 1987 through 2007, and during that time, TCC became one of the most prominent gay choruses in the country. Since that time, he's been a guest director for the gay choruses in San Francisco and Los Angeles. He's an acclaimed conductor, singer, author, teacher. He founded the Women's Chorus of Dallas, and I could go on and on. But the point of my wanting to speak with him was not to document a career bio. That's easy information to find. I wanted to get the benefit of his experience to talk about the heart of the gay choral movement.
Okay, I want to ask about the role of a gay chorus. And in the early days, around 79, 80, it was, we're gay and we want to sing. And then the choruses had to react to the AIDS crisis.
Yep.
What do you think the role of a gay chorus is now?
The gala choral movement, you know, began on several fronts rather simultaneously. It sort of came out of the gay band movement. Gay bands started marching in gay pride parades, and all the singers were on the sideline going, wait, we can do that. We don't march, but we like to do something together. And then, of course, it began with a lesbian chorus, Anna Crucis, and then the gay men's chorus movement actually began with San Francisco. And it was an effort to exhibit pride, come together in a group and do something, you know, fun and entertaining, and at the same time sort of a safety place for gay men and women to come together, although in the early years they were gay men's choruses and lesbian choruses. That was before we got together and said, you know, why don't we have mixed choruses, which came much later in the movement. But in the early days, I was still in the closet and married with children, and so I was not a part of it, although I was in Houston, actually, and aware only peripherally that there were some gay boys that were singing together, but being a good Baptist, I didn't look very hard at that for fear, you know, that I could just jump over at any moment. So in 1986, I came out, and the next year found out that there was an opening for this gay men's chorus in Dallas called the Turtle Creek Chorale. By the time that happened, I think those were really the years in the mid-80s, moving into the late 80s, when the gay choral movement began, for obvious reasons, responding to the AIDS crisis. And that came as a sort of, I think, a necessity, not only because the members of the choruses were obviously living with AIDS and then dying with AIDS at that point, but also because the choruses were turned to by the larger community for healing and for compassion. It was a group of people that was organized, and certainly we were singing for memorial services constantly, both of members and of people who were not members that just wanted some gay people to sing at a memorial service. So those years turned, you know, quite drastically inward to the gay community, as opposed to the sort of outward exhibit of gay pride that had begun the movement. And so toward the end of the 80s, it was absolutely staggering to be a part of a gay men's chorus and a lesbian chorus and be in the midst of that.
What do you think of the role of a gay chorus is now?
The you know, we changed. I don't know if it's for the better or for the worse. I can't. Only history is going to tell that. But as we began to see the decline of deaths from HIV and AIDS, we realized, I can tell you that even with the Turtle Creek Chorale with 250 members, there were many times when it got so bad, I thought, we're not going to have a choir left. That's how afflicted we were with the HIV and AIDS crisis. But then the years wore on, and all of a sudden, people who had even been on disability went, I'm going to live, it looks like. I guess I'm going to have to go back to work. And we realized that indeed we were going to have choruses and people were going to survive. And so I think the gay choral movement at that point, just like the rest of the gay and lesbian world, sort of took note and said, we are going to make it. And so now what are we going to do? We have spent a lot of time on AIDS and HIV. One of the things that we did here, because we had started a women's chorus, was we turned some of our attention to breast cancer and commissioned Sing for the Cure with the Komen Foundation, and actually changed our red ribbons to half red and half pink, and those are still being worn today to show our solidarity with the women's community. And in addition to that, we began to look at issues in the larger gay community outside just HIV and AIDS, and turned our attention musically to civil unions at that time, ultimately marriage, to gay adoption. We really did turn our attention musically to social issues that were relevant to the time. And so I am so proud of the gay choral movement for having responded, having not just buried itself within its own sort of internal issues, but turned itself outward and said, what can we do through our music to raise awareness for an incredibly wide range of issues?
Taking a break from the interview, I'm naturally playing music by the Turtle Creek Chorale. Of course, I'll be playing a lot more by them in other segments of this show, but for this one, I'm choosing what is very likely the most recorded song by gay and lesbian choruses. And it's a song I just love. Fred Small wrote it, and it's a gay anthem called Everything Possible.
We have cleared off the table the leftovers saved, washed the dishes, and put them away. I have told you a story and tucked you in tight at the end of your knockabout day. As the moon sets its sail to carry you to sleep over the midnight sea, well, I will sing you a song no one sang to me. May it keep you good company.
Thank you.
from the 1995 album Family. Appropriately, that was both the Turtle Creek Corral and the Women's Chorus of Dallas.
Using as an example the Turtle Creek Corral, I can understand why a chorus forming in Dallas in 1980 would think it's not a good time or place to have the word gay in their name, and probably at the same time other choruses had the same reasoning. What do you think of the pros and cons of having gay or lesbian in the name of a chorus, and how has that changed over the years?
The issue of whether or not to have gay or lesbian in the name has been an ongoing conversation, I'll say, and that's a nice word. There have been lots of arguments about it, needless to say, since the beginning. I was not here when they founded the Turtle Creek Corral, so I had nothing to do with it. I adopted it, and of course the Montrose Singers did the same thing as the Turtle Creek Corral. Subsequently, later, added gay to their name. When you look at the overall gay and lesbian choral movement, of which I think there are probably 160, 170 choruses involved, I believe the number is about two-thirds, half to two-thirds at least, that are not gay or lesbian identified. And I can't speak for, 100 choruses that do not have gay or lesbian in their name. I wouldn't dare to do that. I know that when they first established it, that it was would be suicide in Dallas to call it the Gay Men's Chorus. Once I got here and had my own painful coming out, I said, girls, I'm not going back in the closet for you. And we started being very open about being a Gay Men's Chorus. We just didn't change the name. I have no idea. I can't tell you why. It just, by that point, I think we had built a brand and everybody knew it was a Gay Men's Chorus. The interesting thing, I think, about the identified lesbian and gay choruses is what happens to the membership, and that is the singing membership. I can tell you that had we been Dallas Gay Men's Chorus, we never would have had straight people sing in the chorus. And we did, and they do have straight people that sing, even though it's identified as a gay men's chorus, as a sort of subtext. It leaves it open. The women's choruses, even more pointedly, have lots of straight women. For women, the sexual orientation is less an issue than it is for men. Apparently straight men are a little, paranoid about being in a room full of gay men. But women, not so much. So I think that to not have it in the name does open up the possibility for allies to sing, to be a part. For the choruses that have gay and lesbian in the name, their mission statements tend to be different, differently focused, and equally important, needless to say. They would argue more important. In my earlier days, I would argue, but I'm too old to argue anymore. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, you did, and I want to branch off of that. In the women's chorus community, it's more gray, as you already alluded to, but some of them, you wonder how they identify. Like Anacrusis, if you go to their website, you will not find the word lesbian at all.
Correct, yeah. The gay men's choruses are most often about being gay and singing. Women's choruses or lesbian choruses more often than not are about being women and singing, not about being lesbian and singing. So there is a very fine but very important fine line. The gay men are all about being gay men. The women are about being women, not specifically lesbian.
I think I want to close with asking about two quotes from your website.
Okay.
And to get a comment, they are, Dr. Seelig takes eclecticism to new heights, and Seelig slices a thick cut of ham.
We did get the attention of Grammy Magazine for an article from whence that first quote comes about takes eclecticism to new heights. And I think that when they did what you were doing and looked at sort of the opus that the Turtle Creek Corral had produced, they looked at the kinds of concerts we did all the way from, you know, Joan of Arc with a silent film all the way to Forever Plaid within one fell swoop. They were kind of shocked at the breadth of repertoire that gay choruses do. I don't think they had really experienced that before. So that was the eclecticism in repertoire that they remarked upon, which is not unusual for any GLBT chorus, but it was the first time that the Grammy group had actually experienced it. Now, the fact that I slice a thick cut of ham, I was asked recently in an interview, you know, what is your greatest gift? And I said, without hand down, I don't even have to think about it, it's a sense of humor. And I think that's probably true of a lot of gay people. Life hasn't been easy. Coming out was very difficult out of the Baptist church, being straight with quotes with two children. Life has not been easy for me at all. And if I had not had a sense of humor, I absolutely don't know how I would have made it through these years. And let me just say, directing 100 lesbians every Monday night and 200 or more gay men every Tuesday night, if you don't have a sense of humor, there are just not enough drugs to make that work.
As a footnote, when I interviewed Dr. Selig on October 7th, he shared with me, off the record, that he was among those interviewing for the position of artistic director for the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. I'm now pleased to report that he was the one selected. There's more to my interview, and you can hear that in the second segment of this show. I'm so glad I planned this as a multi-part feature, as there was just too much to possibly cover in 1 hour. And again, those other hours will include lots and lots of music, and I promise, much less talking than was needed for this segment. You can find all that at my website, queermusicheritage.com. I have to take this moment to thank an internet friend of mine, Greg Allen. He's a member of the Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus in Minneapolis, and we've been in touch a few years now. He is an amazing collector of CDs by gay and lesbian choruses from all over the world, and has cataloged almost 500 and owns most of them. So he's been an incredible source of information that helped give me a framework to this multi-hour special, not to mention sending me quite a few songs that I requested. Oh, for some trivia I got from Greg's data regarding the songs most recorded by GLBT choruses, the winner is indeed Everything Possible, appearing on at least 30 different recordings. I'm only considering non-Christmas songs here, as I really don't care that there were over 50 versions of Ave Maria. And coming in at number 2, with a bullet, should be no surprise. It's Over the Rainbow. And of the roughly 500 recordings, about 16% were by women's choruses, 19% by mixed choruses, and the rest by men's choruses. On these 9 hours, you'll hear about 120 songs by about 60 different groups. How to sum up this hour? I'm going to try by using a few quotes I found during my research. For example, it's been said that every time a gay or lesbian chorus sings, it's a political act, in that it is visibility for our community. Another quote is, "What is it about singing that as we entertain ourselves with our music, it creates in us a place of safety, where we can heal ourselves and strengthen our resolve?" One chorus member said that the unifying factor is not the sexual orientation, as much as it is the struggle to deal with a world that doesn't accept them. And what gay and lesbian choruses do that is unique is to sing from their heart, and they sing their experience. So, I've talked about the music, the message, education, politics, strength, healing, community, joy. Or I could have just played for you my closing song. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Music Heritage, closing with the New York City Gay Men's Chorus from their 1998 album, Look to the Rainbow. This sums it up pretty well. Here is We Are Proud.
We have traveled many roads to come to this place. Some have been easy, some hard to face. We have made so many friends and lost so many on the way. But we're here and we're singing, still singing. We are proud.